At the House of Buns, she orders a hamburger.
Well, of course.
And they brought her some buns and a choking small horse.
Big buns, big buns.
She thought she's getting one heck of a deal.
Big buns, big buns.
$1.99 for a whole darn meal.
Big old buns. Check it out, buns.
Oh, and she opened the buns, put on the mustard. Fries went it up, she got all frustrated. Said, I've had burgers well done and rare. Now I got one that ain't even there. She got no response from ringing the bell. And that's when she started to yell.
Where's the beef?
Young man, can't you hear a call? She don't see no beef at all.
Where's the beef?
Call the cop and catch the thief. The one who stole this lady's meat.
Where's the beef?
Meaty, mighty, mighty, tell us where did her beef.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. So where's the beef song? Apparently, I was just reading in the description that there's also an instrumental of that, which sounds pretty great. I want to see it here. I feel like this is a remake. It's got to be, right? Is this brilliant or a terrible remake? You know? I don't think this is the right one. Where's the beef instrumental? Let's see. Can we do that? Where's the beef? Anyway, that's a song about where's the beef. I put that on there, you know, to talk about it and really, really get into it, and mostly to just kind of scare everyone off who, you know, may. Oh, wait, here we go. Let's try this. Hip hop rap. I guess that's a hip hop or rap song of sorts. I mean, does this have like a real
Shutterstock music?
This is Shutterstock music, by the way. I think this is something someone else just named Where's the Beef? Yeah.
Shutterstock music.
Shutterstock music. That really doesn't interrupt a certain kind of music the way I think they want it to, does it? It kind of makes it like, yeah, this is cool. Like a little guy going, Shutterstock music. Shutterstock. I guess the guy's dead. That's too bad. Who recorded that song? Coyote McLeod, by the way. No relation to Fox McLeod, the well-known Star Fox. So, I have survived one more of my annual staff days. Look at me go. I always struggle with this because here's the thing. Years ago, I wrote a little blog about staff day. And I don't know if I'd say I got in trouble. But, you know, my HR manager decided to go ahead and like write on a comment on it, you know, that was like, well, it takes all kinds or something like that. And I was like, okay, well, I don't know. So, oh, this is great. Okay. So I have mixed feelings about talking smack about staff day because I'm like, well, whatever. Like, is it worth getting shit at work for? No. But this year, we had something going on that I feel A, is okay to talk about, and B, it's actually not content that originated from our staff, right? So I feel a little differently about it because you can, I feel like, talking smack about it. Here's the thing. We had a speaker come, and this, you know, speaker was paid to talk and all that stuff, and she was, like, terrible. I mean, she was horrible. And I'll tell you why. And so I guess I feel differently about it because the thing is, if I gave a speech to a staff I worked with, you know, if I was the manager and I gave a speech and they were just like fucking lambasting me for it, then I would feel a little, you know, hurt or pissed off, right? But if I was paid to go talk to a staff and they were like, this was a bunch of bullshit, and if I came with the quality of material that we got, I don't know how upset you could be about that. You know what I'm saying? It's a little bit like you write a book, someone reads your entire book, and then hates it. You're like, well, what can you do? You know what I mean? Like, they're not wrong. They didn't like it. That's where we are. Not everyone likes it. You know, Stephen King, not everyone likes The Shining. Not everyone is smart or correct. Okay, here we go. So our speaker was this lady named Adrienne Roselle Belinsky. And what is her claim to fame? Well, at one time, she was a Miss Kansas. She's a former Miss Kansas, right? Which is like, I guess, you know, I guess you call yourself a former Miss Kansas when you were. It sounds like, you know, with presidents and stuff, you kind of like, you're like the former president so-and-so, right? But I sort of feel like, sorry, I'm taking a screenshot here so you can see. We'll get to this in a minute. It makes it sound like you've sort of disavowed yourself of that. And I think that's kind of nonsense. But whatever. I guess you're not Miss Kansas anymore because you just can't be Miss Kansas. I would love to see, like, it would be great if a state, you know, some state that was like, fuck this bullshit, Idaho or something, was just like, we're just going to declare the same person Miss Idaho every year. Like, she doesn't need to come back and fucking dance around and stuff. This was one of the things, too. She was like, I don't know if she was Miss America or Miss USA, right? But she told us the difference was whichever one she was in was the one where the girls have to have talent, and the other one is just a beauty pageant, which I was like, okay, that's right. I remember all those talents that the ones, you know, only in this realm, only in the beauty pageant realm is like throwing a baton around like a big talent. You know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, well, this woman is hideous. Absolutely. You know, she just looks like her face was flattened in a press of some kind. Her body leaves something to be desired. Susan Boyle would be like, Jesus Christ, get it together. But so good at throwing this wand around. Did you see how many times it spun over in the air? I couldn't even count. It was going so fast. And then she didn't even let it hit the ground. She caught it. Oh, my God. Wow. Like, here's the thing. I'm saying this as an adult who bought a yo-yo because I just, you know, for boredom. But I mean, like, I wouldn't take a yo-yo on a stage to impress people, or at least not seriously, right? Like, why would you do that? And that's how I feel about that, too. Or, you know, it's like, oh, we'll do tap dancing, which is, again, I feel like the tap dancing, and I don't, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like the tap dancing in these contests is like real tap dancing, like big-time tap dancers would be like, not impressed. But, you know, or the singing, whatever. Whatever the talents are, I feel like the people running it, you know, for the contest, it's good. In the realm of that actual thing, they'd be like, fuck this shit. It would be like me entering a contest and being like, look at these, look at this graphic design for my beautiful website. And they're like, I mean, if you're a really good looking dude and that's your claim to fame, you're not claiming graphic design as your thing, then sure, it's totally fine. But if that was your thing, if that was your talent, was not secondary to being good looking, it was primarily look how good you are at drawing shit, a snowman, it's three balls on top of each other. Oof, that would be trouble. So she gets up there, she tells us this. She tells us also that she's like, I'm the world's hottest grandma, which I immediately was like, no. Okay? Here's why. There's a few reasons why. Number one, she married into a family. Her husband had like three kids, and one of those kids had kids. Now, I think her husband's quite a bit older. I saw some pictures before staff day, because, you know, I was like, who is this person that we're going to be sitting with for an hour and a half or whatever? So I looked it up, and I was like, who is this guy? And then I was like, oh, my God, that's her husband? Whoa, quite a bit older. But, you know, that's not a big deal. But here's the thing. A, when you call yourself a grandma, part A, you either need to shoot these kids out of your body or raise them, you know, from childhood in order to claim them as your kids, in my opinion. I could be wrong, but not even to claim them as your kids, but to claim them as your kids in the way of saying you're a hot grandma, right? Because when you're a grandma, I'm like, okay, I have an expectation that you've raised children or birthed them or both. Hopefully both. But, you know, one or the other is totally fine. But when you're like, I don't know, when I married my husband, the kid was like fucking 17. And then that kid had a kid when they were like 22. Are you really a grandma? I mean, you are a grandma. But this is the thing. I feel like it's very deceptive to call yourself the world's hottest grandma when you're like 34 and you've not really raised kids. Because let's put it this way. Let's say, let's just pretend that I'm, you know, browsing the internet looking for granny porn. And if I clicked on granny porn and I got a 34-year-old woman, I would be like, what is this bullshit? Even if she was a grandma, technically, I'd be like, this is not what anyone's looking for. When I'm looking for hot grandmas, this is not going to cut it. You know, I'm not even going to get into the whole thing of like, oh, well, here's the other thing about it. I feel like this is a little bit like when people say, let's say, who are the hottest first ladies, right? Constantly, it's Jackie O and Michelle Obama. And I'm like, well, yeah, Barbara Bush was a fucking, that's a grandma. Barbara Bush was a grandma. You know what I mean? Laura Bush even was a grandma. I mean, these are grandmas. That's what a grandma looks like. And so you're like, well, let's, putting aside the issue of judging, you know, first ladies by their attractiveness, let's just throw all that out for a second and just say, like, I don't know how fair it is to be like, oh, you're the hottest first lady, Jackie O, when it's like, well, what you're really saying is you're a lot more attractive than a group of women who are 20 to 25 years your senior. I mean, I would hope so. I don't know. I mean, I would hope that's the case. Just by virtue of the fact that you're younger. I don't know. I bet some first ladies were like real good looking when they were younger, right? I don't know. Even let's compare, we could compare Michelle Obama and Hillary Clinton. Like Hillary Clinton was older. And, you know, when she was younger, was like, I don't know, good looking, average? It's hard to say. Anyway, and here's the other thing though. I do feel like part of when someone tells me they're a grandma, I feel like earning being a grandma is like recognizing that you don't really care that you're super good looking. I think that's a good quality. That's a good quality to me, and a grandma-like quality is, oh yeah, it's not really important to me to be attractive anymore. Like, I don't think my grandma was like, she was dressed nice and shit, but she wasn't like, people see me and they want to fuck. I'm the love-matic grandma. You know, they do grandma shit. And it's fine. If you're a grandma and you want to bang, that's fine. I'm just saying it's very deceptive when a 34-year-old woman tells you she's like a hot grandma. It's cheating. That's cheating. Okay? Because you haven't actually had the kids or raised the kids, and nor have you gone through the, you know, I'm sure there's a 34-year-old legit grandma out there. However, I feel like the lifestyle that meant you had a kid when you were like 15, who then has a kid when they were 15, well, seems like you'd maybe have a little less time for self-care. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, that's all I really want to say about this woman's looks. you know, is what she said and why I immediately balked at the idea. So here's the deal. She came to tell us about, you know, life, I guess, to give us kind of a life coach talk. And her story is about how she grew up and, you know, when she grew up, all she wanted to be was like a Broadway dancer, a dancer on Broadway, right? Which you're like, I already feel like a dick. Here's kind of what I hate about staff day. It kind of forces me in a way to really judge the storytelling ability of someone who's telling me about, you know, they're telling you about like the worst moment of their life. And you're like, yeah, that would blow. I don't wish that upon anyone. But like, well, we'll just continue. So she wanted to be a dancer on Broadway. She was, I don't know, Miss Kansas or whatever, Miss USA contestant or something like that. And then she's riding a horse. And she kept using the term bareback and saying the horse was bucking underneath her. And in my half listening, it just sounded like she was fucking the horse. And that's been like a theme on this show the last little bit, which is weird. I can't remember if that was on the legit show or the bonus show where we were talking about horses and centaurs and all that. But horse fucking. It was on my mind. And then when I'm in and out and you just hear bareback over and over, I'm like, I know what that means in the horse riding world. And I know what it means outside the horse riding world. And I'm not sure. You know, I'm like looking around the room to be like, does anyone else hear the term bareback and think like, ew, like me? The answer is yes, some do. She falls off the horse or the horse steps on her. Something happens and basically her foot comes off. You know, her ankle is completely destroyed. She goes to the hospital. She was a textbook case for amputation, right? And this whole time, and the way she's telling this story is very frantic. You know, she's like taking you in the moment where she's like, and I couldn't breathe. And I saw my dream. And, you know, she has this like metaphor. She has a balloon. And she blows up the balloon and she's like, you know, and it's hard to get the balloon blown up at first, right? And she really was struggling. And at first I was like, are you really like that weak? Like you can't blow up a fucking balloon. And then I was like, oh, this is for effect. I see. So I was just like, what is she going to do if she can't get this balloon blown up? So anyway, and you know, but then when your foot pops off, then your balloon deflates, right? So anyway, she goes, she's like a textbook case for amputation, but then they don't amputate her foot. They give her some kind of weird prosthetic that's like experimental and da-da-da-da. And, you know, she gets the former Miss Kansas who probably has, well, who has enough money to be taking writing lessons, white lady surgery. You know, I was just thinking about like, well, yeah, some fucking some guy from Ecuador working in a warehouse gets his foot crushed by a forklift. Do you think they're fucking like, let's do the experimental surgery on this guy? You know what I mean? So he could continue to work in the warehouse. They're like, eh, fuck it. But it's like her. Well, she's pretty, so she's obviously gonna need a foot. Can you imagine? It would be so hard to be a beauty queen with no foot. Because that's, if there's anything I've learned, it's that beauty queens have to have real nice feet. I don't know that I've ever seen Kate Upton's feet. They're just not close enough to her boobs or butt or face. You know what I mean? I'm sure there's pictures of her feet. I'm sure that if I Google Kate Upton, feet will be like one of the third things. But it just seems like you could get by. I don't know. I mean, if you're looking at a beauty pageant, would most people downgrade someone who had one foot? I don't think so. I don't think you could even do that today. Like, I feel like you'd have to give it to someone in a wheelchair, right? If they were, like, the winner. So why not? Why the fuck not? Anyway, she gets a foot. And, you know, she's telling this joke about how, like, they had a plastic surgeon fixing up her foot and her ankle. And she's just got, like, a little lump on her ankle. Like, you would never notice it. If she's wearing pants, you couldn't tell at all. And if she's wearing, you know, if she was wearing shorts and you happened to look at her ankle, you'd probably notice it was fucked up. but not, I'm sure some people would say something, idiots and fuckholes. The kind of person who would say, are you pregnant, is the same kind of person who would be like, what's going on with your foot there? And then she's fine. So, you know, her story is basically like, one time I almost lost my foot and then I didn't. And this is what I'm talking about. This is why I feel shitty, because it's kind of like, you gotta talk shit about this thing where this lady, you know, yeah, almost losing your foot would really blow. And like, I'm sure it's not a walk in the park to have a fake foot and a fake ankle and stuff. I'm sure that it's not as good as having the regular kind of foot and ankle. You know, I'm sure she'll have to get that fucking whole thing replaced at some point. But there you go. That's what it was. And then she's telling us, too, this was fucking weird, right? Because basically she's espousing the theory of life is, you know, 90% how you react to things, 10% what happens, which I agree with to an extent. I mean, I think the ratio is dumb, and, like, to try and put it in this objective numeric thing is stupid because that's... never works. But like, I get the point of things are going to happen and you're just going to have to react to it. But you know, she's giving these examples and she's like, you know, cancer, you know, some of you will probably have a loved one who has cancer. Some of you might have cancer. Like, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to react? You know, and I'm sitting there with a coworker who, you know, had lost a family member, a close family member to cancer very, very recently. And everyone at the table kind of awkwardly looks at her like, this lady is an idiot. And I'm sorry, but it is idiotic. It is idiotic to stand in front of a room of people who, by the way, now I know this lady does a lot of like presentations at schools and stuff. I feel like you could get away with that in a school because you could talk about, you know, statistically the chances that a large number of students in a given high school have had cancer or have lost a close family member to cancer aren't great. Or let's put it this way, far less than when you're talking to a room full of ladies with the median age of probably like 45. I mean, many, many people there, their parents are gone at this point. You know what I mean? Many people have had friends who are older. I know for a fact there was a minimum of one cancer survivor in the room. And so, like, when you're talking about it's 90% how you deal with it, I'm like, I don't know if cancer is 90% how you deal with it. Or, you know, she said AIDS. She's like, AIDS. Someone you know is probably going to end up having AIDS. You know, what are you going to do about it? How are you going to react? And I was like, you know, I only know one person for sure that I know had AIDS. And I'm just like, I mean... I think he does a great job in how he reacts to it, but at the same time, 90-10, I don't know. I mean, some things control. Here's the thing. I think her message is like the 90-10, right? Okay, I almost lost my foot. I can't be a Broadway dancer. How am I going to react to it? And I'm sort of like, you know, and she's like, you got to have a positive attitude. You got to think big and da-da-da-da. And my thing is like, well, it is about how you're going to react to it. But I think it's like, oh, you lost your foot and then you got, you know, whatever. How are you going to react? Well, you get up and walk with a limp. Like, you don't have to be unchanged and perfect. You don't have to be happy about it. You don't have to be like, oh, the fucking Chinese word for opportunity and crisis is the same word, and you're like, I don't think that's true. But fine, you know, if that's true, by the way, opportunity and crisis is the same word, I bet in China they're saying like, you know, the word for problem and challenge in English is the same, and you're like, well, it's not, we just say challenge in job interviews because we don't want to use the word problem. Which, by the way, I've decided in my next job interview I'm not going to do that. If I say problem, I'll say, you know, oh yeah, well, it's one of the problems. And I'll say like, I know most people say challenge when they talk about a problem, but to me, a challenge and a problem are different. A problem has a solution. A challenge may or may not, right? A challenge is something that comes up that may or may not have a solution, but it challenges you. A problem is something that can be solved or has a solution. So if a situation can be solved or has a solution, even if I don't know what that is, that's not a challenge, that's a problem. And it's okay. Why is it so hard? Like, oh, these aren't math problems, these are math challenges. I fucking hate that. I hate when, you know, it's like, oh, let's put on the worksheet math challenges instead of math problems. Because it's like, why? You put the same stuff on there. No one cares. Anyway. I just see the world. It's funny because I see the world sort of the way she does, but sort of different, which is like, and also, I hate that this forced me to do a couple things. It forced me to, okay, for example, her dreams to be a dancer on Broadway, and she couldn't do that because she lost her foot. When you're talking about your dream being making a living as a dancer on Broadway, I'm sort of like, there's like 1,000 things that could, that do get in people's way, right? Hers was that she lost her foot. But, you know, somebody else's is like, I mean, I'm poor. I couldn't take dance lessons as a kid because we were broke. You know, I grew up somewhere where they didn't have a dance coach. My parents were like, that's a bunch of bullshit. You're going to play football. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many things that can prevent a dream like that, that it's kind of like, well, yours was extreme, but it's not. I think what I'm saying is the story of having a difficult to attain goal and then not meeting that goal because of X, Y, and Z is like not unusual. So it's not like an engaging idea, right? To me, because it's like, I don't know. And also because you're specific to this one, it's kind of like if I wanted to be a pro baseball player and I lost a hand or something, and then it's like, well, you could Jim Abbott that shit, but I just wasn't able. But here's the thing. It's like, yeah, maybe you wanted to be a pro baseball player, but who knows if you would have been good enough. And also, that's not like a lifetime career for most people, right? That's like something you do for like 5 or 6 years and then you retire and you got to do something else. So it's like, well, just look at it like this. Your life has accelerated and you skipped over those 6 years. Just imagine it's like you had a head injury, you did all that shit, you forgot about it, and now you got to make a life for yourself again. I mean, a Broadway dancer, what's the shelf life of a Broadway dancer? It cannot be that high on average. And, you know, one out of how many people? Anyway, but it forces you to, like, do that. And it forces you to play that game of, like, oh, well, you know, you had all these other advantages no one else had. And, you know, they did or didn't become a Broadway dancer. Because I'm not, like, a big fan of saying, of playing the, like, the privilege math of, okay, well, is losing your foot, how does that compare to being genetically predisposed to being, like, overweight? You know what I mean? Like, it's an impossible game. But I feel, like, forced to do it because it was just, I just found the whole thing asinine, you know, and there was a lot of, like, you know, positive self-talk. She's like, I can tell you, ugh. The first part of her speech was all about, like, I'm going to tell you how to improve your day in 5 minutes. And I know you can do it. 5 minutes a day. That's all it takes. And she's like, I know you can do that. I can do that. You know, I spend 45 minutes a day on Instagram, so I can spend 5 minutes. I hate when people do that. I hate when people lie because they're like, oh, do this in 5 minutes a day. Like, I see this all the time on, like, workout stuff, right? Six-pack abs in 5 minutes a day. Go fuck yourself. Okay, there was this speaker later in the day who was, I mean, whatever. But one of the things she was saying was something that I was like, thank you, that's fucking true. Because she was like, I know some, like, female bodybuilders who do that, who get, like, the six-pack abs and go in the competitions. And she's like, you can't do that by doing, like, even, you can't do that by doing 200 crunches a day, right? You have to diet just right. You have to do so much cardio. I mean, hours of cardio. You have to do all these things. And then when you go to the competition, you completely dehydrate yourself, right? So that basically your muscles get shrink-wrapped by your skin. And it's like, thank you. You know what I'm saying? Like, thank you for dispelling this idea that, like, if you can have a goal, you can meet that goal, but, like, don't make part of your goal doing it in 5 minutes a day, because that's dumb. And if you only have 5 minutes a day to devote to your goal, I would say, like, you don't really want that thing that much. If that's all you can devote is 5 minutes a day, give me a fucking break. I phone it in on this fucking podcast all the time. You know that as a listener. And look at me. If I do it once a week for like 45 minutes, there you go. I've already beaten the 5 minutes a day. I'm pathetic. I'm a loser. I've gotten nowhere. And even I'm doing better than 5 minutes a day. That's my speech that I give. And then, you know, the whole thing was about, like, I'm going to tell you the four things you have to do. This four-step system, it's so easy. It's so easy to remember. And she kept repeating the steps, and I do not remember them, except one was, like, you know, talking to yourself in the mirror. So I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and people like me kind of thing. And I just, like, the one of them, one of the things she talked about that cracked me up was she was, like, you know, achieving your dream, before you can achieve your dream, you're going to fail a lot. And I was sitting at a table with someone who was like, well, I guess I'm poised for success then. Which was pretty awesome. She was like, I talked to somebody else too, and they were saying, you know, she was like an emotional appeal speaker, right? And, this person was like, I don't know, I like it better when they're more like facts or more objective or something like that. And that's more interesting to me. It doesn't really work for me. And I was like, yeah. And she was like yelling the whole time. I mean, it was crazy. It was hard to like sit and just be in there. It was like uncomfortable, but not in that way of like I was shocked into a realization of just where you're like, could you just, like, tone it down? You're at, like, from almost the beginning, she's at, like, a 10. And then she just goes on a 10, which I'm like, if I was critiquing this as a story, as a written story, which is kind of what it was, right, a performed story, I'd be like, here's the thing. A mistake a lot of people make is they tell a story where they're constantly trying to up the ante. That doesn't work. Because eventually you're going to hit a wall where either you can't up the ante because you can't think how, or in upping the ante, you violate the rules or the tone of the story enough that it doesn't work anymore and no one's going to listen. What you got to do is peaks and valleys, right? So you have a peak, an exciting part, a part where the ante is very high, and then you have to come down and go into a lower thing. And she was just up all the time, and that makes a plateau. And that's no good. That doesn't work for your story most of the time, especially if it's an hour and I'm supposed to listen. Anyway, that's the speaker. Now, she did write a book called Blood, Sweat, and Tiaras, which she was selling. So we could have done that. I don't know if anyone bought it, but like, I think we can look inside. Should we read like, see if we can read like the first thing. Da, da, da. Many of the names of the characters you're about to meet have been changed to protect the not so innocent. Okay. Okay. Let's just do the first like page. How's that sound? Scene one. I stood at the back of the stage waiting for my entrance. The only thing separating me from the audience was a row of trees. And then there's like four spaces. I could hear the audience laughing at one of the characters on stage, but from where I stood, I could not see the crowd, nor could they see me. I could feel their presence sensing their attitude toward the show. There was a lightheartedness in their laughter that comes from the leisure of a Saturday night versus the stress of a work week. It was a good crowd, which meant I could breathe easy. Just like a child has moods, so does a live audience. It would vary from night to night, but I suppose that was one of the many reasons I loved live theater. Wow, this is crazy. Okay, I can't even keep going. I just don't like it. I just don't like it. As I joined Calvin on stage, I batted my eyes at the character and the man. He paced from my right to my left, obviously flirting with me, but acting as though he wasn't. I twirled my parasol, returning the tease. I think this is probably the guy she married at some point. Which this doesn't have anything to do. And she told us this story, which was like, I mean, the story of how she met her husband, which had nothing to do with any of this other stuff, but whatever. It was just like, oh, oh my God. And she was like, my dream home has two dishwashers in it. This is the ultimate thing. I can't believe I almost skipped over this. She's like, it has two dishwashers in it because then you don't have to put dishes in the cabinet. You just put them in the washer. And then when it's full, you clean them, and then you just take them straight out of the washer and put them in the other washer. And so she talked forever after that, and I was like, wait a minute. I don't think that actually works. I think you would have to have three dishwashers. Here's what you would, because here's, okay, you have dishwasher A and dishwasher B. Let's say both are full of clean dishes at this point, right? You take a dish out of dishwasher A, and then it's dirty. Where do you put it? You can't put it back in A. The rest are clean. And B, the rest are clean. Okay. They're both dirty. You have the same problem. Now, let's say dishwasher A is empty, and dishwasher B is full. So then you wash the dishes in dishwasher B, and they're clean, and the other one is empty. So then you take the dish out of dishwasher B, it's dirty, and you fill dishwasher A with the dirty dishes. But then you'd only be able to run dishwasher A when it was all the dishes from dishwasher B had moved to dishwasher A, right? When you'd use every single dish in the dishwasher. Because otherwise, you'd either have to double wash something that was clean, and that would also require you to move a clean dish from dishwasher B to dishwasher A in order to run the dishwashers, and therefore have all clean dishes. What you really need is three, because you need clean, dirty, and empty, right? You'd have to have a utility. And this is so fucking complicated. It's like, and the system of two dishwashers does not make more sense than a system of cabinets. Because what does that save you in terms of work? Like, okay, you put the dishes away in the cabinets, and then you take them out of the cabinet. I guess it saves you that work, right, of putting them in the cabinet. Which, and let's be honest, I've lived most of my adult life now without a dishwasher, hand washing the dishes, right? And I do like having a dishwasher. However, not a big fucking deal. Putting them in the cabinets is really not a big deal. And I'm a lazy motherfucker. I probably should have talked to her about my whole don't separate the silverware thing, because I'm like, I think this might be what you're looking for. I think I might got what you need, lady. Just stop fucking around with the silverware and you'll be 10 times happier. But here's the thing. She talks about this, and I think it's just kind of a joke and whatever, but I just get caught up in that, and then I can't think about anything else. You know what I mean? I can't focus on what she's talking about because I'm just thinking about how this system is supposed to work and how it does not work. And then also, you know, she said some other stuff that I was like, oh, good one. You know, like when she's meeting her husband and she's like, he's a really good dancer. And she's like, I asked, you know, I'm like, well, is he, he's must be gay. He must be gay because he's a good dancer. Which is like, and then, you know, later on a similar vein, she was talking about dishes again. She talked a lot about dishes. And she was saying, like, how men don't put dishes in the dishwasher. They leave them in the sink. Which I was like, I mean, I work in an office, almost all women, and somebody's putting dishes in the sink. It could be just dudes, but I doubt it. But anyway, these are the sorts of things that I'm like, I guess if I was one to get offended by things, these would be things I was offended by, right? She said something else about like what dudes do that I was like, fuck you. No. And when she was talking about, I was telling Poon Master Flex, I was like, she's talking about putting dishes in the sink and not cleaning them. And Poon Master Flex was like, you do your dishes all the time. I never do my, I always just stack them up in the sink and then, you know, do them all at once. And I was like, I know. Anyway, just these little things that I was like, I mean, I'm not offended by that stuff because I just don't get offended. All I'm saying is like, we got to play by the rules, right? Okay. Here's one from somebody, a review of the book. Some might think my rating is biased, but I have not always been very easy on Adrian. Adrian Belinsky is my stepmom. As most kids can attest, I think we are the hardest on stepparents. Some might think my rating is, it's a 5-star rating, by the way, is biased, but I have not always been very easy on Adrian. When she gave me her book, I stacked it with my others until I had time to read it. Luckily, it wasn't too long until my 5-year-old picked it up and asked me to read it to him. After the first chapter, when I told him Adrian kissed a stranger during a performance, he pretty much lost interest and was concerned for his papa, my dad. I was hooked and continued reading on. I have known Adrian for years, but this is something more. I cried as I read through her heartbreaks and challenges. If you are looking to be inspired, to be lifted up, and to find hope, I highly recommend this book. Okay. Okay. I don't know why people do this when they're like, oh yeah, I'm related to this person. Stuff like that. Just give me the 5 stars, bitches. They're all 5-star reviews. Great book. Congratulations, it says. Fabulous tale. You will undoubtedly see your own life reflected in the brilliance of these pages, and just may rediscover the sparkle in your own tiara. Well, that one's pretty good. You know what you can tell, too? Okay, so this book came out in 2016. It does not say when, but look at this. When are the reviews? November 2016, December 2016, October 2016, November 2016, October 2016, February 2017, February 2017, February 2017. You know what I mean? So you're just like, oh, okay, so these are like all fucking from the release, basically. So is that enough to explain why I'm a miserable shell of a man after this day? I mean, it's just, here's the thing about staff day where I work, okay? It's just a really long day where there's no needed information. You don't need any of this stuff. You don't need to do any of this stuff. You don't need to know any of this stuff in order to move on and live your life. I think that's all I really want to say. You know what I mean? About staff day. I did have two other things that I had written down that I thought I wanted to get to. They're pretty quick. Number one is about the wall. Now, we don't talk a lot about Donald Trump on the show. Because, you know, why bother? I mean, is there anyone out there who's not getting enough content about or from this man? However, I had a brilliant idea about the wall. Well, I had two ideas. The first one was, why are we building a wall instead of just like digging a trench? That seems way easier, doesn't it? Digging a, like dynamiting a big trench. Make another Grand Canyon. We have another unnatural wonder. But also just like, fuck it. I mean, that seems much easier than building a wall and harder to get around, right? Wouldn't it be much harder if someone was like, you've got to go across the Grand Canyon versus you've got to get past this wall? I think it'd be way easier to get past the wall. You can go over, you can go under. You can't go under a canyon, right? I guess you could go through, but you're like, man, I got to go fucking down the one side and up the other side? That's insane. I don't know, and then we just, like, grease the side of it so you can't climb it? I don't know. I just remember when I was a kid and I was at the Grand Canyon, it was like, to go even a small distance down the canyon, you're just on these switchbacks, it takes forever. And looking across the Grand Canyon, you'd be like, this is impossible. Like, I don't know why, if I was a settler, I'd be like, fuck that. You know, they're like, let's take this wagon down into the canyon and back up the other side, I'd be like, fuck you. Like, I'll just live here. And they're like, there's nothing here. You'll die. And I'm like, that's what I mean. I'll just die here. Why die falling into a canyon on, you know, and an ox crushes me versus just I can just kind of sit here and look at the canyon and be like, well, it was a good journey. But the real idea I had that I thought was good was, instead of building a wall out of like bricks or cinder blocks or what, some bullshit, right? It's not going to be good. Let's just take all of our like national monuments and like put them there. This started, of course, because I was thinking about the Vietnam Wall, right? The memorial. And I was like, we already got a wall. It's a very American wall. It's, you know, just it's just kind of hanging out. Why not move it over there? And then I was like, there's a bunch of shit. Like, you could just cut down the Washington Monument, chopper it over, lay it on its side, probably. I don't know how big around it is, but it looks pretty big. And then, you know, you've got a fucking pretty good section of wall right there. Boom. Mount Rushmore. That thing's enormous. That's a wall. And then you face it all. Well, here's a question I had, because I was like, I think you'd want to face it all in towards America, because then you make family road trip time is about like we drive along the wall, which is all of the national monuments. You know, you got your fucking Statue of Liberty. Sure, it's on its side. It's crushed like it's fucking Planet of the Apes or something. But nevertheless, you know, you just, I don't know. And then here's the other side of it. How fucked up would it be if you are you're coming over the border and you approach the border into America and there's just all this shit piled up. You're like, is that fucking Statue of Abraham Lincoln? What the fuck is going on? What kind of dystopian shit is going on in America that they just piled all this? It looks like when you pile all the furniture against the door in a fucking zombie apocalypse movie. Like, when that's what you've got going on, that sends a message, which is, we don't know what we're doing, but we know it's not good. So that's my idea for the wall. You know, so call your representative and let them know, hey, we've got another idea. Now, this is a little different, but there you go. The other thing was, there was a job position that opened up at my work. So I'm reading the job descriptions, and, you know, they always have some things that they're like requirements and then preferred whatever. And one of the preferred thing that's always on there is like Spanish language fluency, and then it says parentheses preferred, right? Because they're like, well, it's not required, but it would be great. And I know why preferred is on there is because they're like, well, we don't want someone to not apply because they don't speak Spanish. So we're reinforcing that this is preferred. Another thing in there said, I'm going to like summarize or paraphrase because I don't remember exactly, but it was a thing of like ability to work with diverse cultures, people, and, you know, understand cultural differences, something like that, right? And at the end of that phrase also said parentheses preferred. Which I thought was really awesome because it was kind of like the way it read to me, because I'm someone who's not, you know, I'm almost at a place in life where I'm like, do you really have to say in a job application that you even, that that's important? Like, we probably won't hire you if you're a raging racist, right? If you come in here and start yelling about, you know, ranking the races in terms of how productive they were for society, we're probably not going to give you this job. Like, I don't even feel like you have to say that. But then I thought it was extra funny to say it and then put preferred. So it's like, listen, if it comes down to you, raging racist, and someone with the same qualities who isn't a racist, we might give it to the other person. So just be aware of that possibility. I guess is kind of what they're saying. I don't know. I had a good laugh on that because I was like, oh, well, that's got to be a sigh of relief for like a total racist to be able to look at that and say, oh, I'm not disqualified from this. That's fucking awesome. You know, what a world we live in. What an amazing time it is to be alive, where I don't have to worry that I can't get a job just because I'm a terrible, terrible person overall. Well, guys, I think that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in. If you missed out on last week's secret episode and our print newsletter and that kind of thing, it's because you're not a donor to Patreon. And most of you aren't. So you can go to HelpfulSnowman.com. You'll see a Patreon link at the top. There's also a link to our newsletter, which I highly recommend. The newsletter is not so much a newsletter of, you know, buy this or do that. It's more like a, it's just imagine it's like a humorous blog put in newsletter format. You know what I mean? Butt sex is not negotiable. Okay? That was like the theme of the last one. So if you want to get a newsletter that's unlike any newsletter ever, there's no commitment. It's super easy to unsubscribe. So I recommend it. I send one a month too, by the way. It's not like you're going to get a bunch of bullshit. You get one a month, gives you 5 minutes to read. Just read it while you're taking a shit and then move on with your life. All right. That's all. We'll see you next time.